Samadatam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Kakadamayam Dadati Sabandantikam Vanchakaputu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. The four Kumaras were so ecstatic to have seen the Lord because Krishna is so beautiful. And not only is he beautiful, but he is composed of bliss. So when one's eyes contact that bliss, one's purified eyes contact that bliss, one also becomes blissful. And the four Kumaras who are already situated on the transcendental platform, that means they were liberated, that means they were free from the bondage of material life. The bondage of material life is exhibited as janma mrityu, jara vyadhi. Birth, death, old age and disease. That's what it means to be bound. It means we must take a miserable birth within the womb of one mother or another mother and come out crying. And we must become old aged, that's if we're lucky, and don't die early. And disease, this is what it means to be in the bondage of material life. This is what it means to have a material body. Yes, we try to get pleasure from our material body, and to some degree we are successful getting pleasure from the material body. But the pleasure that we as souls need, require, is like an ocean of pleasure. And what we get, the pleasure we get from material life is like a drop. Because the material body is meant for misery. Just imagine, consider any part of the body, the hands, the ears, the head, toenails, anything. Just imagine, tongue even, what pleasure you can get from that part of the body. So there's some pleasure. But just imagine the quantity of pain you can get from that same part of the body, whichever it is. Hand with a hammer or run over by a truck or something like that. Or pins in it or something, or nails being driven through it or something, or being eaten by ants and or whatever. So the body ultimately has the capacity to give us unlimitedly more pain than it has to give us pleasure. So what is it actually meant for? This is the bondage of material life. So to be liberated from the bondage of material life, liberation, moksha, mukti, means that one is free from the material body. So that in of itself is great, great pleasure in absence of anxiety. Mostly it's absence of anxiety. But then, on top of that, a devotee who is pure and has an attraction to Krishna not only is on that platform, Brahma Bhutesu, Bhutesu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So on that Brahma platform is where bhakti yoga or devotional service takes place. And then the ecstasy actually is unlimited. It is unlimited because in bhakti yoga one comes in contact with the unlimited directly. That is what bhakti yoga means. The soul contacts, connects. Yoga means to connect with the unlimited. So one's bliss pleasure, it becomes unlimited. This is an annam buddhi vardhanam. This is an unending ocean of nectar. But yet, we are anchored, unfortunately, so anchored to the pleasures of the body. And that prohibits us, and the mind, the material mind, and that prohibits us from properly connecting with Krishna. So therefore, before we can properly connect with Krishna, those contaminations must be cleansed from the heart. So what is the process of cleansing those from the heart? That is the same thing as the process of relishing the sweetness of connecting with Krishna. That is the absolute nature of bhakti. The same things that one does when one is trying to become purified is exactly the same things that one does when one is purified. But the results are different in the sense that when one is purified, or getting purified, the result of chanting Hare Krishna, for instance, is the heart is cleansed. But when one hears Srimad Bhagavatam from Prabhupada, an exalted personality, the result is that one's consciousness is cleansed. It's like the result of seeing the sun with a cloud in front of it. Gradually the sun will dissipate the cloud, and then we'll be able to see the full blazing glory of the sun. But until the sun dissipates the cloud, we can get traces of the sun coming through. But then, when we are performing bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness in pure consciousness, then the ecstasy of direct association with Krishna is there. So the four Kumaras who are already pure on the purity means the absence of impurity. They're already on the transcendental platform. When they saw the Lord, oh, immediately they were ecstatic. And just by hearing about their ecstasy, if we are fortunate, we can get a glimpse, like the sun. Sometimes when the sun is behind the cloud, it's very beautiful when it shines through the cloud and we get and see the rays of the sun coming through. Very wonderful. So similarly, we can get a glimpse of what it must be like to actually come in contact to see Krishna. And the Kumaras, if you remember, there was that comment by Srila Srila Swami, that Jiva Goswami was amazed by. I thought it was so wonderful when he said that to see the Lord is wonderful, but it is not as wonderful as serving the Lord. Why? Because when one sees the all-attractive Lord, one's heart melts in love for Him. And then when one loves Krishna, what does one want to do more than anything else is do something for His pleasure. That is the very nature of love. And that is so pleasing to Krishna. So therefore Krishna, the living entity, becomes happier still. Still happier by serving Krishna than he does even by seeing the beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful form of Krishna. So when the Kumaras were ecstatically, the breeze came carrying the aroma of the Lord's lotus feet and the tulsi. So even that, by that indirect touching of the Lord's lotus feet, their minds were disturbed, even though they were already situated in transcendence. So that disturbance was not a material disturbance, because they were above matter. So that disturbance was the spiritual platform, a higher platform. They wanted something more wonderful. So then, the four Kumaras, the next verse said that this is actually the perfection of yoga, to see the Lord directly, not to meditate even on the impersonal. There's one verse that we heard earlier in the first canto: Atmaramas cha munajo na granta pilukrame korvanti utamdram. What was that verse? You know it? Atmaramas cha munayo na granta piurukrame korvanti ahaituki bhakti itam guna. Yeah, So all, even if you're completely self-satisfied, when you come in contact with Krishna, it is most wonderful and become attracted. So the Kumaras began to speak. They first said in text 46, the four Kumaras said, "Our dear Lord, you are not manifested to the rascals." The Sanskrit word is duratmanam, duratma. There is mahatma. Mahatma means a great atma, a great soul. And a duratma means a soul who is degraded. So Prabhupada translates that as a rascal. Because if our consciousness is degraded, our self is degraded, it shows that we have improper desires in our heart, rascally desires. So can such a person who has improper, impure desires see Krishna? No. So you are not manifested to rascals, even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. So although Krishna is there, Ishara Savavutanam, Riddhisheya Arjuna Tishtati, even though Krishna is there in everyone's heart, still it is not that everyone can perceive him. Only when someone's heart is pure can he perceive Krishna. So you are not manifested to the rascals, even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. But as far as we are concerned, we see you face to face, although you are unlimited. So consider that. The Lord is unlimited, and yet he has a form. So what does, when we think of a form, we think of, form means that it is boundaried. If I am sitting here and I am limited, that means I'm not sitting here, I'm not sitting there, I'm not sitting there, I'm not sitting there. I'm not sitting everywhere. So we think from the material point of view, when we use material vision, if the paper is here, if the water is here, it is not there, it is not everywhere. So we think, if God is everywhere, and he is by definition, how can he have form? How could he? Because form would imply a limitation upon him. But that is material vision, material thing. Because Krishna's form is not a material form, it is an unlimited form, it is a transcendental form. So his having form does not limit him being everywhere at all. Because that is the nature of the Supreme Lord. He possesses achintya shakti, or inconceivable potencies. And if his potencies, if the Supreme's potencies were not unlimited, there would be no meaning to him being the Supreme Absolute Truth, to him being God. Because by definition, God is the law maker. He is Jehovah, the law maker. But that the law maker, he creates the laws. That doesn't mean that he's under the laws. So yes, the Kumaras are wondering at this fact, that although you are in everyone's heart, still I am seeing you face to face with my eyes. Although you are unlimited, your form is right before me, and it is composed of what? Not skin and bones and hair and muscles and corpuscles and whatever's in there?
Mucus,
yes. Can't forget mucus. Huh? Bile, yes. Can't forget bile either. And what else? Anything? Ooh, we can forget that. So it's composed of all kinds of, but Krishna's body is not composed of that. It is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, Satchidananda Vigraha. That is the actual composition of his transcendental body.
So they're amazed and in wonderment because they're seeing this transcendental form right before their eyes. And then they continue saying, the statements we have heard about you from our father Brahma through the ears have now been actually realized by your kind appearance. So there is one word. Here. That comes in the next verse. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. The so-called yogis, I'll read further down. Here the four sages, Sanat Kumar, Sanatan, Sanandana, and Sanaka, they are described as actually sincere devotees. What does it mean to be a sincere devotee? Because this is actually the price of seeing Krishna. Very, very, very simple. It's just a matter of sincerity. And what does it mean to be sincere? It's something to think about very deeply. What does it mean to be sincere? To be completely sincere? Anyway, we'll leave that one with everyone else. You think about it. What does it mean to be a sincere devotee? So they were actually sincere devotees. They were serving Krishna. They were meditating upon him. They wanted to think about him and serve him with no other motive. Their mind and hearts were consciously focused on pleasing him. That's what I would say sincere is without the dictionary before me. It means pure. Panyabilasita sanyam jnana kamana vrita anakulena krishna nashilanam bhakti uttama. This is first class devotion. No other desire except Krishna's pleasure. So they were sincere devotees, actually sincere devotees. Although they had heard from their father, Brahma, previously, about the personal feature of the Lord, only the impersonal feature, Brahman, was revealed to them. So this is, there are different features of the Absolute Truth. Vedanti tattva vigyas tattva mityanam adayam. There is one Absolute Truth. Just like if we think of the are there any kings left? The king of Nepal. Okay? Does anyone know the name of the king of Nepal?
Oh,
Virendra means so powerful. His Majesty. Is that what Virendra, that's how it's translated? Majesty, power. So, when you think of him, there are different ways to think of him. One is you think previously, it's not exactly true now, but it's by his power the whole government is running. So one way to appreciate the king is to appreciate the power. So from a distance, if one doesn't know him, who is the king? Oh, the king is the one who's making the government work. And then if one gets closer, one sees not only is it power, the king, but it's a person. There he is with his scepter, with his sword, with his crown, sitting on the throne, holding court. Very official, very powerful. It's a position, a post. So not only is there power, but the power is a person. But then, if one knows him actually intimately, then one can even see sometimes his son wrestling with him, his baby son, and his son goes, he pushes him and the king falls over, making believe that he's been injured, and the son is riding on his back as if the father was a horse. And the wife is feeding him, and the children are doing this, and he's dealing with his father in this way. So One is power, one is the official position, and the other is the intimate knowledge of his personality. Are they three? Or are they one? There's only one person. But depending upon who knows him, the qualification of the person who knows him, he appreciates him and understands him on one of three different levels. So it's like that with God. So one can know the power of God. One can know all the Almighty who is a person, but you don't know really much about his personality. Or one, if one is very, very, very fortunate and very intimate and very completely sincere and qualified, one can know him very intimately. Very intimately. So the sages, previously, all they knew was the power of the Absolute. Adhyayan, this is called. There is one Absolute Truth, but realized in three different features. So they only knew the power of Brahman was revealed to them. But because they were sincerely searching for the Lord, because they wanted to know him more intimately, they finally saw his personal feature directly, which corresponded. And once they saw him, they recognized that it corresponded with the description given by their father. Thus they became fully satisfied. They said, yes, this is the Absolute Truth. And this and his personal feature. Because their father had said the Absolute Truth is like this, like this, like this. Here they expressed their gratitude, because although they were foolish and personless, thinking that the power was everything in the beginning, by the grace of the Lord, they could now have the good fortune to see his personal feature. Another significant aspect of this verse is that the sages describe their experience of hearing from their father Brahma, who is born of the Lord directly. In other words, the disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma and from Brahma to Narada and from Narada to Vyasa and so on is accepted here. Because the Kumaras were the sons of Brahma, they had the opportunity to learn Vedic knowledge from the disciplic succession of Brahma. And therefore, in spite of their impersonal beginnings, they became in the end direct seers of the personal future of the Lord. So someone may think, if they were told about the personal future of the Lord, and that they see the, they hear about that the king's son is riding on his back, the king's back as if he was a horse, and he's whipping him and telling him to go faster. And someone will think, oh, this is a very inferior concept of God. I know God is the great all-pervading power of the government. This is very... Yeah, you can think about it. Okay, it's okay for you, but it's not very advanced. But actually, it's the most advanced. Because if you know that feature, you know all the other features too. So in any case, they continue in text 47. We know that you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead. They're seeing his form, even though they're seeing it right in front of him. They're understanding that this is the Absolute Truth, not... And because he's there before their eyes, it doesn't mean that he's not unlimited. So this is, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, who manifests his transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness. Because the Lord's body, again, what is it composed of? It's composed of pure spiritual energy. That's called Sudasattva, pure goodness. So they're saying, we're seeing this form composed of pure goodness, transcendental energy. This transcendental, eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy. So nothing an ordinary citizen can do unless he's very, very qualified. But nothing he can do on his own can get him to see the king. He can deal with his power. He can deal with his representatives. And sometimes, maybe he could even sing on special occasions, see him sitting on the throne. But he can't go and watch him playing with his family and things like that. And the intimate dealings, he can't. But if he's very, very qualified, sometimes the king may invite him to his house. If he's very qualified. And that's called mercy. And that's the only way to get to the inner chambers. And simply, that's the only way that one can gain the most intimate association with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. One must be extremely qualified. That means completely sincere. That means one must be a full lover of Krishna and have no other desire. So we want that. We want to be with Krishna in Vrindavan, the spiritual world. But are we willing to pay the price? That is the question. We have to want that and that only. And then we can attract Krishna's mercy. We can't force it to come, force an invitation. But yes, Krishna will see that this soul is very sincere. And he'll maybe poke him a little bit sometimes to see what he does, if he's treated like this, treated like that, to see what the nature of his sincerity. Sometimes he'll hide himself from the devotee. Sometimes he'll, like he did to Dhruva Maharaj, Narada Muni. Narada Muni was meditating and then Krishna appeared to him and then disappeared. And said, you will not be able to see me any other time in this life. But I've just given you a glimpse, practically to drive you mad, so you have nothing else on your mind. And Narada spent the rest of his life just chanting, just waiting. Nudarsoham kuyogina, he said. Because you still are, you have a little bit of impurities in your heart still. And you are a little immature in your service. So this is my medicine. I will put the most wonderful thing, me, before your eyes. And then it's like a poor man who suddenly wins the lottery or something and becomes a millionaire overnight. And then the next day, he finds out after the phone call came and everyone, the photographs were taken. And then the next day, someone comes and says, oh, I'm sorry, we made a great mistake. It wasn't you after all. Sorry, don't take it so rough. So what is he going to be thinking of for every moment after that? What it was like to be a millionaire for a brief moment. So by mercy, this transcendental eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy. Through unflinching devotional service. So there's two sides. It's what Krishna's job is in one sense, and then what is our job. His job is to give us mercy. Our job is to be pure and sincere and to perform unflinching devotional service. So we usually complain about how Krishna is doing his job, but we don't do our job very well. Why don't you give me more mercy? Well, why don't you perform unflinching devotional service? Everyone should worry about their own business and take responsibility. So this is who his personality can be understood by his mercy through unflinching devotional service by great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The absolute truth can be understood in three features. What are they? What is the lowest? You remember one?
Okay.
Yeah, very good. Second? Yep, Paramatma. So it's Brahman, Paramatma, and then Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Bhagavan is that person. You actually get to know his personality. What he likes, what he doesn't like. what he favors, what he looks like, the color of his skin, the type of earrings he wears that glisten against his cheeks and reflect against his cheeks, the kind of hair he has, wavy and dark. This is Krishna. But it's very difficult to know that, except by mercy. So here it is admitted that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the last word in understanding the Absolute Truth. Last word meaning the final stage. Even though the four Kumaras were instructed by their great learned father, Brahma, they could not actually understand the Absolute Truth. They could only understand the Supreme Absolute Truth when they personally saw the Personality of Godhead with their own eyes. In other words, if one sees or understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the other two features of the Absolute Truth, namely impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma, are also automatically understood. Therefore, the Kumaras confirm, you are the ultimate Absolute Truth. It is said, this is going down further in the purport, it is said that one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead when one is even slightly favored by him. Otherwise, without his mercy, a man may speculate for thousands of years and not understand what is actually the Absolute Truth. So how can we get, all one needs is just a slight favor. So how can we get some mercy, some favor of the Lord? This mercy can be perceived by the devotee when he is completely freed from contamination. So mercy may be there, but it's like now our eyes are covered by our material desire. So even though it is there, we cannot see it. Therefore we don't have to deal with it. We don't have to take advantage of it. It is stated, therefore, that only when all contamination is rooted out and the devotee is completely detached from material attractions can he receive this mercy of the Lord. So that's our part, but Krishna will help. So in this verse, Jiva Goswami says something. So the Kumaras first say, we know that you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, who manifests his form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness. So Jiva Goswami says that Lord Narayan, the Lord, may ask, well, how do you know? You're seeing me. You're seeing me and you've heard that God is all-powerful and all-pervading and everywhere. So how do you know that I am that? Maybe I'm something else. So the Kumaras then reply, we know because you have now manifested before us your transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness, satena. So they recognize this form as completely transcendental. Until this moment, we did not understand you. It took seeing him before they actually could understand him. How superior that beautiful form was. But now that we can directly see you, we have concluded that you are the Supreme. You appear before the spiritual eyes of us who are pure in heart, free from contamination. You are not visible to ordinary material eyes. You are not known by transcendental knowledge if it is devoid of love for you. You have created our love, rati, for you. Otherwise, we would not be able to love you. So it is by his mercy, by appearing, just like when we see the most beautiful, beautiful person, or even in this world, the very wealthy person, or someone who's so strong, or someone who's so famous, naturally our consciousness, our heart go to that person. What to speak of seeing Krishna who possesses all wealth, all strength, all beauty, all knowledge, renunciation, fame, and strength. What sticks? So by Krishna's manifesting, appearing, walking with his lover's feet to them, he's giving them his mercy so that they will become attracted and get love, rati, for him. To the self-realized sages who are freed from pride and false ego, but who have no love for you, you appear as the splendid Brahman effulgence. But there is a specific path by which one can attain love for you. And what is that path? The Kumaras then describe that specific path. They say, your mercy is the spiritual practice by which your spiritual form becomes manifest. That is the path of getting mercy. By your mercy and by unflinching devotional service in great humility, dridha bhakti yoga, yugai. Dridha means very firm, unflinching. By mercy on one side, that's the descending part, and our job is the unflinching fixed devotion. By that one understands you. This spiritual practice is also genuine humility. Because when we understand that we're tiny and insignificant and we have no ability to pierce through, even if we're so intelligent or so wonderful in so many ways, we have no ability to pierce through the realm of matter. To understand Krishna, we just simply don't have the ability by ourselves. So we need humility. And then we'll perform devotional service in an unflinching way. So this spiritual practice is also genuine humility by which one understands unflinching pure devotional service. Then, prior to Text 48. So Lord Narayan may ask then, what are the people who understand me like? What are they? What kind of people are they? What do they do? And then the answer is text 48. Persons who are very expert and most intelligent and understanding things as they are, engage in hearing narrations of the auspicious activities and pastimes of the Lord, which are worth hearing and worth chanting. Such persons do not care even for the highest material benediction. In other words, this is what they do. They hear about Krishna and they are so fixed in that. They don't care for anything else. Even the highest material benediction, namely getting free from the world of matter, free from all misery, free from death, they don't even care from that because they're getting so much pleasure from just simply hearing about Krishna. So they won't even take that if a pure devotee has said, I'll give you liberation, just give up what you're doing, or I'll give you the wealth of the world. Or if I'll give you the most beautiful women, or beautiful, handsome men, or wealth, or whatever you want, please, you take that and give up devotion. These people, see Krishna, maybe unlike me or like that, they'll say, no, I don't want anything. These things are just useless. Kimanyaye, what is the use of anything other than your service? So such persons do not even care for the highest material benedictions, namely liberation, to say nothing of other, less important benedictions, like material happiness of the heavenly kingdom, of going to heaven, swarga. They're not interested, simply not interested in material life. So imagine the taste they are getting, these kind of people. They are not interested at all. They cannot be tempted. Prabhupada explains in his purport. There are five kinds of liberation, the least important of which is called sayujya, to become one with the Supreme. Devotees don't care for such liberation. Why? Because they are actually intelligent. It's like someone who's on the path to becoming a billionaire. And someone says to him, if you take this $100, just get off. I'll give you $100 whole. $100. So that's not intelligent to get off for that. Nor are they inclined to accept any of the other four kinds of liberation, namely to live on the same planet as the Lord, to live with Him side by side as an associate, to have the same opulence, to attain the same bodily features. They are concerned only with glorifying the Supreme Lord and His auspicious activities. This is actually impossible for us in our stage of consciousness to understand the pleasure that exalted souls get from glorifying Krishna. But actually in that glorification, they meet Krishna. So they don't want anything. They won't trade that for anything. So therefore, apituyarta darshana. They don't care where they are in the material world. They don't care if they're in heaven or hell. As long as they can just hear about Krishna, remember Him and glorify Him. Even if they are offered these five kinds of liberation, they refuse to accept them, as stated in the Bhagavatam in the third canto. Materialistic person aspire for sense enjoyment of heavenly pleasures in the heavenly kingdom, but devotees reject such material pleasures at once. The devotee does not even care for the highest post, the post of Indra. A devotee knows that any pleasurable material position is subject to annihilation at a certain point. Even if one reaches the post of Indra, Chandra, or any other demigod, he must be dissolved at a certain stage. So what should one do when Lord Chaitanya, a devotee is not interested in temporary pleasure. From Vedic scripture, it is understood that sometimes even Brahma and Indra fall down, but a devotee in the transcendental abode of the Lord never falls. This transcendental stage of life, in which one feels transcendental pleasure in hearing the Lord's pastimes, is also recommended by Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya was talking with Ramananda Roy, there were varieties of suggestions offered by Ramananda regarding spiritual realization. But Lord Chaitanya rejected all but one, that one should hear the glories of the Lord in association with pure devotees. That is acceptable for everyone, especially in this age. One should engage himself in hearing from pure devotees about the activities of the Lord. That is considered the supreme benediction for mankind. So at this point, the Kumaras were great. They had become devotees already, and they were conscious of their offense. What was their offense? They had cursed two devotees of the Lord, the gatekeepers. So they became conscious that that was improper, and they want to engage in Krishna's service. So because of the bliss of serving Krishna being greater than even seeing the Lord, listen to what they pray here. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, because we have committed an offense. We have cursed your devotees. We have become ill wishers of those who are beloved to you, who serve you, Jayan Vijay, the gatekeepers. And therefore, for this offense, for this improper action against your devotees, whom you love so much, we will probably have to go to hell. We are not begging you to forgive us and take away our having to go to hell, but we have another request. We pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. So our hearts and minds engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet. And as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. So they want to be fully engaged in Krishna service. They don't care if they're in hell. Let us go to hell, they're saying. We've done something wrong, let us be punished. But please, what we can't tolerate is the separation from serving you. So please give us that, even if we have to go to hell. So, Prabhupada's purport. The four sages now offer their humility to the personality of Godhead because of their having been haughty in cursing two other devotees of the Lord, Jaya and Vijaya. So before, it seemed like Jaya and Vijaya were wrong. Kumaras, the sages, from entering. So they were wrong. And now, because the four Kumaras cursed them, it appears that they're wrong. So it's called haughty. For cursing Jaya and Vijaya, the two doorkeepers who checked them from entering the Vaikuntha planets were certainly offenders. But as Vaishnavas, the four sages should not have cursed them in anger. After the incident, they became conscious that they had done wrong by cursing the devotees of the Lord. And they prayed to the Lord that even in the hellish condition of life, their minds may not be distracted from the engagement of service to the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. Those who are devotees of the Lord are not afraid of any condition of life. This is the only way to become fearless. Provided there is constant engagement in the service of the Lord. It is said of the Narayana Para, or those who are devotees of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nakutastina Bibhuti. They are never afraid. They are not afraid of entering a hellish condition. For since they are engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, heaven or hell is the same for them because they are always with Krishna. In material life, both heaven and hell are one and the same because they are material. In either place, there is no engagement of the Lord's service. Therefore, those who are engaged in the service of the Lord see no distinction between heaven and hell. It is only the materialists who prefer one to another. These four devotees prayed to the Lord that although they might go to hell because they had cursed devotees, they might not forget the service of the Lord. The transcendental loving service of the Lord is performed in three ways, with the body, the mind, and the words. And here the sages pray that their words may always be engaged in glorifying the Supreme Lord. One may speak very nicely with ornamental language, or one may be expert at controlled grammatical presentation. But if one's words are not engaged in the service of the Lord, they have no flavor and no actual use. So in this way, the Kumaras were desiring to go back to be always connected to Krishna's devotional service. Let's see if we can find a comment by Jiva Goswami. The Kumaras plead, "Let us be born in hell. We do not mind. We are not afraid of hell. Our only request is that we may never again have the misfortune of becoming averse to you. We are not afraid if our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. We will be like bumblebees that taste only the sweetness of your lotus feet, and our words will be engaged in describing our direct perception of you." That's their request. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is what we want. Hearing this heartfelt plea, the Supreme Lord forgave their offense to his devotees. By his wish, their offense faded into non-existence. In this way, the passage should be understood. So actually, as we'll hear later, that the anger that they felt against the two gatekeepers was actually generated in their heart by the Lord. Yeah, because he wanted something to go on. It wasn't exactly like an offense, but yet if one's devotion is so strong, like the Kumara's devotion, they were so sincere and so humble and so pure, even if one commits an offense to Krishna, Krishna will remove it. So the Kumaras are saying, because it is not impossible to serve you in hell, for us who desire only devotional service, hell, where we can serve you, is better than impersonal liberation, where it is not possible to serve you. Our devotional service to you is the very wonderful success of our lives. And then in the last verse of their prayers, so this is the realization, because the four Kumaras were the teachers of all those who are following the path of knowledge. So this is their gurus. So here is their realization. Their hearts were pure, and the anger was put there by the Lord, and they cursed the gatekeeper by the Lord's desire. This will become clearer later. And here's what they say in their final prayer. O Lord, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto your eternal form as the personality of Godhead, which you have so kindly manifest before us. Your supreme eternal form cannot be seen by unfortunate, less intelligent persons, but we are so much satisfied in our mind and vision to see it. So the conclusion is that the Lord's form is composed of transcendental bliss and its pastimes and activities and qualities. They are all transcendental and more significant than impersonalism, the impersonal, all-powerful aspect of the Lord. And therefore, even after one is liberated, one performs devotional service. So this pastime really pushes this point of how the realization of Krishna's form is superior to the realization of Krishna's power, how God is everything and everywhere. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? There's more though, because the Kumaras offer their prayers. But next, the Lord begins his reply, and his reply is very wonderful. Very wonderful, very special and wonderful. So we'll cover that. Try our best to cover that tomorrow.
A question about
Sridhar Swami.
Sridhar Swami said that to serve the Lord is more glorious than seeing the Lord.
Than even seeing Him, yeah.
So I was just wondering, is that the difference between the neutral stage of the love of God and the servitorship stage? Yeah. And why is it that someone in the neutral stage, like I've seen some descriptions of it, where because the living entity is so small and the Lord is so great, it's actually like coming into that position that they just feel too overwhelmed by the Lord's glory to even think that they can make Him happy by serving Him. And why does that change?
When someone has that tendency towards neutrality, which isn't considered by some actual devotional service, because devotional service, the mood of service has to be there. It's called shantaras. It's just appreciation of the Lord, of His greatness. It's not that, who am I? I'm so small. How could I serve the Lord? It's not like that, as much as just, it's like when seeing the king on television, you know, when he's passing, he's just satisfied just being in his presence, something like that. It's more like that. So what causes someone to go up? That's what your question was, right? So there's two ways to look at it. What caused the Kumaras to go up? Yes, and that the Lord's mercy is usually manifest through association. So if one associates with someone that has a higher position, one will go up. And the second way to look at it is, although we, from our point of view, we like to say, well, this one's better than this, and this one's better than that, because I want to be the top one like that. But when you're talking about the spiritual platform like this, it's not quite like that. Some people have an inherent nature to relate with the Lord in that way. So once it's on the transcendental platform, in one sense, you can't say that it's inferior to anything else. You can't say, well, who wants to be a coward boy when you be a gopi or something like that? It's quite inappropriate. It's like we're like an ant at the bottom of a mountain, and there are three mountains, and they're all billions of miles high, and one mountain is 5 inches higher than the other, and the other one is 7 inches higher, and the other one is 12 inches higher, and we're like an ant at the bottom, and it was trying to say, look at that one, it's higher, you know, that's the real high one, and there we are, like little tiny insignificant, the most insignificant, not knowing anything. So it's absurd. So they're all glorious, all transcendental. But when looked at in an analytical way, one is higher. But it's not out. So that's the other way to see it.
So therefore, this movement and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, they're not geared in that way to neutrality.
No, not at all. To direct servitorship.
At least.
All the different rasas contain servitorship. But it's just, that is our nature in relationship to Krishna. Yeah. It's not that we go beyond servitorship ever, but we add something to it. Intimacy, for example. It's all different varieties of intimacy of servitorship. Because the more intimate one is, the more one service one can render. Any other? We have 1 minute's worth of questions or answers. Yeah.
And then 1 minute came too much. I wanted to just a little bit speaking about unflinching devotional service.
Yeah.
And you were saying that was one side was the body side, the other side was
mercy.
I was just thinking as you were saying, it struck me that really one aspect of unflinching means that some results not coming, like the Lord's mercy is not coming, but they're not flinching.
Yeah, specifically that.
I was thinking that way.
Yeah.
That's sincerity.
That's the position of a devotee. Krishna can do what he likes to me. But as far as I'm concerned, I am his servant forever. He may throw me to hell, he may throw me to heaven, he may trample me, he may crush me by his embrace. But as long as something is giving him pleasure, that's my concern. But that's very hard. It's very nice to talk about it. It slips so sweetly off the tongue. But oh Lord, when you get crushed a little bit, you want to look for somewhere to hide. So it's.
So at that stage, the devotee says that because he knows when Krishna crushes him, does it mean that he knows that aspect is only to do with the body?
The way a devotee sees that is that Krishna is just bringing me closer to him. He sees Krishna's mercy in everything. That's why he's unflinching. He sees Krishna's favor in everything. Tateyana kampam susamit shamanam.
And then it seems that one of these qualities we may only get from association with other devotees. So how can we judge if we're trying to work on
Oh, it's probably not a good thing that we go around judging everyone, you know. Let's look at this one over here. Not recommended.
How do we know? How do we know that person's good for us or not? They seem to be saying that.
They seem to be senior?
Yeah. I mean, it seems after being here more years, they've been chanting more years, they haven't known if they can help us in the way that we need to be helped.
Are you thinking something very specific?
No.
Oh. Oh. Well, generally, then, it's so hard to answer such a specific question with a general. How do you know that someone who's, how do you know if a person who's been around a long time is actually advanced enough to help us? But we already know that how fallen and rotten we are. So, therefore, if they're even around for a long time, they can help us. You can go over to them and say, how did you manage to survive for so long? It's so hard. I mean, it's not good to be in a judging mood in that way. You know, who's qualified to help me? We take help where Krishna, any place that we can find it if we're sincere. But yet, obviously, the other side's there too, you know, that we just don't go and ask advice from anyone. You're so lucky because you could ask your husband. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gopamaya ki jai. So tomorrow, if Krishna permits, we'll hear how the amazing response of the Lord. Amazing and wonderful.
So we're only 1 night behind?
Yes, we're 1 night behind. But these verses...